And we're back. Welcome back to Deep Thinking, the road racing, motorcycle road racing podcast. If you are listening to another motorcycle road racing podcast, you're being misinformed. You're being misled. Don't settle for cheap imitations.
Yes, you want the real Hickory Farms, not the fake kind.
Actually, at this point, I'm pretty hungry. I'll eat damn near anything.
Okay.
I'm Michael Gugis, and you can find my insane rantings at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com.
And I'm Ed Sorbo, and you can find me at le-suspension.com.
You know what, Ed? I can't read that on the trailer this time. The trailer is
blocked by the view of your motorcycle.
No. I've got Lindemann Engineering and Race Suspension, but it doesn't actually have the website.
The website's not on there because those are the old, gigantic stickers that Jim had made.
That's so cool.
And there's a big stack of them still. If you look carefully, you'll see that there's two black lines on either side. I covered up the phone number and the address, which was the old phone number and the old real address.
So seriously, those are stickers?
Those are the original stickers, yeah. So Jim had, you know, little versions and medium size, and then those giant trailer stickers. And so that's what I put on the back of the trailer.
You know what? Did he come up with that logo on his own, or did... I love the logo. I really do.
You know, I never asked him who came up with the L and the E connected like that, but I mean, it's
clever.
Been around forever.
Yeah.
Probably.
It's way cool.
It's simple and it gets, you know, it's unique.
Yeah.
That's the genius of, well, that's an example in good marketing, right?
Yeah. There's
some kind of simple logo, like the Golden Arches,
you know, like the Nike swoosh. Yeah.
Simple is the foundation because it can be remembered. You get too much crap in there, like Natalie Orwich is always telling me, you got too much stuff in your ad. It's hard for people to, all of that, you know? There's a lot of truth to that. Hey.
Yeah, what?
How many tickles does it take to get an octopus to laugh?
What?
Tentacles.
Oh, dear God. I have to leave now. Oh, my God. How long have you been waiting for that one, Ed?
Oh, I read that on Facebook this morning. It's good. Not very long. I didn't have to remember.
That is awful.
Hey, so this is episode 27. We haven't said that till now.
Right. Yeah, it's 27. And where? How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop?
It doesn't matter. You bite in.
The
right?
world what, may never know the was never the tagline. Okay.
So in episode 26, we talked about the total end of World Superbike rider Sykes.
Tom Sykes. No, we didn't talk about that. We asked why he was getting his ass kicked by his teammate.
Okay. And who was the rider before that you said was all washed up? Lorenzo. Lorenzo. I'm seeing a pattern here.
He showed up. What happened? That was great.
Eeyore. That's your new name.
Oh, dude. Eeyore's an optimist.
Eeyore
is an optimist compared to me. You've read the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
The robot is the Eeyore, yes.
Yeah. What's his name? Marvin, the robot.
Right.
One of my favorite lines of all time. The first 10 million years were the worst. Then the next 10 million years were also the worst. After that, I went into a bit of a decline. Hold on. In my defense, nobody saw Lorenzo getting his shit back together. That's not true. I could not agree. No, I could not agree with myself more.
That's true.
Let's talk about this. You have to admit, Lorenzo showed up at Jerez, and I was not the only one who's saying this is make or break time. And he got his head back in the game, and it worked. It worked really well for him. I don't know if the temperatures were better if he would have run away with the race at Le Mans, but he did really well. And it's back. He's the Lorenzo from 2010. And 2012, not the Lorenzo from 2011 or 2014. Who was that guy in his leathers last year?
Off subject a little bit, in the interviews after the race.
Because of deep thinking, we never go off topic.
No, never. Somebody asked, you know, what's going on with Honda and Marquez? Mm-hmm. And the Yamaha guys had a great answer.
Which was?
That their bike's a little bit better on the braking now.
Mm-hmm.
So now the Honda doesn't have the advantage that it used to have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's making... So then they didn't say this part, but this is how it's not necessarily that the Honda's bad. It just looks bad compared to the Yamaha, right? So let's say you're riding around on your bike and you're Marquez, and you're at the ragged edge all the time,
right?
And you make a little mistake and it costs you something, except that going into every single corner, you get this advantage every time, right? So then that's hiding your little mistakes. But then now all of a sudden it's a new year and that advantage is gone.
You can't make up
And
that.
So now when you make your little mistakes, everybody sees them.
Right?
So what they were saying is, you know, first of all, they both said, look, don't count Marquez out, dude. We got to race that guy everywhere you go, right? You know? And the second thing was, it was not necessarily that the Honda has a problem. From the Yamaha guys' point of view, it's that we are doing better than we were.
Yeah,
and
they work really hard.
These guys all know that it's going to leapfrog. The guys at Honda are smart, and they're working hard too, and they're going to figure something out. Which also reminds me, see you on Sunday. So Michael and I also do podcasts in print because, you know, you're crazy. And so the last one we just did
Road racing is all that matters in the world.
There's so much to talk about.
Right.
The last one was about reasons people races. And so I ended it by saying, see you on Sunday. And Michael edited that out because he didn't understand the deeper meaning of it. And, of course, he had no way of knowing it because he doesn't know the backstory.
Because it wasn't there.
Yes, because so see you on Sunday came about from me and my friends racing in 250 GP class in the AMA all over the country.
Right.
And the specific time I thought of it for the first time was bombing down the back straight at Road Atlanta. About halfway down the back straight, Perry Melichek is on the side of the track with a broken crank.
Okay.
And I sit up and start to brake for turn 10, and I think to myself, oh, yeah, right, Perry's out. Cool, this is Friday, right? And then about halfway through the braking zone, I go, no, I'm going to have to race that motherfucker on Sunday, just like always, even if he's having a problem today on Friday. And sure enough, I did.
Absolutely.
Hence the term, see you on Sunday, because the serious guys are always there on Sunday. That's because it's like Rossi, right? You watch him in practice and you go, eighth? Dude, sometimes he's down in 12th for a long time.
Right.
And you wonder what's going on. And it turns out, yeah, he likes starting from the third row. It's better for him because he's always in the front battle come the race. So,
well, there is that. You know what? There's also an advantage. Look, it's not an advantage if you're trying to win ever to be anywhere other than pole. Okay. But there is something to be said for settling in to eighth or ninth at the beginning of a race and then picking your way past the dudes that you know you can get past. You know, you're the person in charge of the past and control of all that. And there's a lot.
Yeah, it's hard to lead from the front. That's why people are so impressed by Lorenzo. I mean people like Rossi. In the interview, Rossi's all, he's really hard to beat when he's that guy.
Yeah.
It's like,
exactly.
Right?
When Lorenzo shows up.
When Rossi says that about you, you got some shit together.
Exactly.
So yeah, I just thought of another thing about why people get all wound up about pole. All of us most regular people observing, right?
Right.
We are grounding our ideas in our own personal racing.
Right.
Most people's personal races are 6 laps long.
Right.
Well, then pole really helps
with
a 6-lap race, right?
Yep.
These races are, frick, how long are they? They're 45 minutes long, whatever the mileage it takes to get to that.
60 miles, I think.
Right?
Between 50
they're like
and
12 of your regular races in one
right?
go. And so, you know, it's like a big endurance race in a lot of ways. You know, in 1990, when Team Hawaii did so well at the 24 Hours, we finished the first lap in 25th place.
Yeah, it doesn't
and
matter.
And ended the race third overall, right? Because I told my starting rider, I'm like, look, dude, just cruise. Don't blow it in the first lap. And, of course, he knew, you know, mattered.
There was a guy who used to race the solo races at Willow. And somebody, no, it was Carl Lowry. I'm sorry, I'm thinking of something different. But it was Carl Lowry, Carl, really fast guy. He used to say the endurance races, or we were doing 20 lappers at, hey Catherine, how are you? You can talk, it's okay. It's like her agent's like, no way, she talks, she's getting paid. you know what the funny thing was? Catherine was never actually here. I just hallucinated that.
I just imagined her walking up and giving me a kiss because she's leaving.
Right?
Can we get back to our topic?
No, in a minute.
Carl Lowry rides too fast on the street.
I know nothing about his street behavior. Never seen him.
I have reports.
I have reports. So we have evidence. The thing that
I don't know if that's evidence. Yeah, I just have reports.
Well, the thing that that I remember him saying was, you know, those long races, you go from a full tank to an empty tank. in a six-lap race, if you're really trying to do it right, you start with very little, just enough to do six laps. You go from a full tank to an empty tank. The tires change during the period of the time that you're doing the race, right? They go from brand new, then they do the three-lap drop-off or the six-lap drop-off. Then they slowly deteriorate. The track rubbers in. You learn to, you know, you're dealing with... I heard somebody say, I was watching a little bit of Formula One this morning, and somebody said, I know, right?
This is like the 82nd subject change. Okay, listen.
This is awesome. I'm almost done, I promise.
Start the stopwatch.
Oh, it's okay. We got this thing going.
On there, and I got my reading glasses.
Right, and I got your reading glasses, so, too. Somebody said at Monaco today, cannot...
Continue to state the obvious, please.
The track is a living thing. You cannot gather data on Friday about the track.
You know, all the motocross guys laugh when we talk about how the situation changes
right
through the duration of the race.
Right, you know. Well, we have moto. What is motocross?
That's when you ride in the dirt.
What is that?
Yeah. So,
okay.
So last episode 26, right. You were talking about the Kawasaki World Superbike team and how the Ray new kid is kicking butt and blah blah blah. So,
right.
Reno Calrissian. I like Calrissian because it's Lando Calrissian from Star Wars.
Cal Worthington.
Yeah. I got to put my reading glasses on. So he sent me a Facebook message. Watch the World Superbike race, and you will see the riding difference with Skies and Ree. Is it
Sykes? Sykes and Ray.
Ray is much more of a 250 rider and uses the rear a lot, a lot less. Skykes is point and shoot. He is abusing the tire. Rhea is 30 plus pounds lighter as well. Rhea can make it work better and longer than Skykes. End of story. Also, Sykes has never had a great rider as a teammate.
That's possible. That I'll concede that last part is possibly true. He's had since he's been with Kawasaki. He had, Joan Lescours, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, who wound up being crippled in a testing accident. So we'll never really know how good I think I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, Lescours would have been. He showed promise. That guy had heart. He came back from injuries that would have ended your and my career until he had an injury that ended his career. And then it was Laura Spaz, who wasn't bad, but you know, I think he's like 8'3" or something like that. He's really tall, so we don't really know about that. Sykes has always had a problem getting that rear tire to last, you know. And if Ray really is carrying more cornering speed mid corner and not doing the point and shoot thing, that would help explain why the rear tire lasts.
Yep.
You know, you run endurance races. You don't point and shoot those things. You roll through the middle of the corner, you know?
I thought it was a good comment because, like, what we were talking about, the reasons all of this stuff goes on, right? And my answer was there's a million reasons, and you can't mix all the combinations. And then here this weekend at Donington, which has smooth flowing turns, which would seem to be good for the 250 style rider, and it has point and shoot turns, so it's kind of a balanced track, maybe, who knows. The order is switched, and it could be because the track suits one rider better than the other. It could be that one rider is having a bad day. It could be that one rider fixed his problems or whatever, you know, who knows. That's why we call it racing.
Why they call it racing.
You gotta figure it out.
There's about three places at Donington where you're just hard on the brakes, and then just hard coming back out on the gas. So those would be the places that Sykes has done well. It's really sort of funny that it's the that has been very traditionally one of the problems of the Kawasaki, and that it comes and goes. And at when Sykes can get the rear tire to last, you don't know which way he's gone. He's unbeatable. You know, it'll come back, and it's just like for no reason.
So how long is it going to be until Dorna, who owns the rights to World Superbike
Dorna. Try to pronounce some of the words correctly.
You know, it's English, and then it's words, names from other languages.
Right.
Right, and they all have different... Okay, I don't even know all the rules for the sounds of the letters that they're supposed to make in English, and it keeps changing.
Exactly. Okay? Just as long as we don't use the word conversate, which is not a word.
There was some guy, to change subject again, who I was talking to. He was a 250 racer, was at VIR at AMA race 1 year.
Uh-huh.
And I was talking to him about something, and I had his name wrong. Like, he's like, you know, Alan, not Alex, or some, you know, right? Like Mike or Michael. People get all pissed off about that shit.
Not Alan. He's probably French.
And so I had his name wrong, whatever, and he corrected me, and I go, yeah, whatever. Oh, he was pissed. See, anyway, I didn't care what his opinion was because he was slower than me.
That's why I learned to pronounce Reno Dremian's last name.
What was I going to say?
I have no idea.
Oh. Doorknob. owns the rights to World Superbike.
Right.
When are they going to put him on a MotoGP pass kind of setup so I can watch the damn races?
They already have.
Where is it?
You go to worldsuperbike.com or wsbk.com, whatever it is. I forget their website.
So you mean like if I actually did a Google search and checked for it, I would find it and
find
I could
it.
Buy
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
As a matter of fact, it's discounted right now because we're so far into the season.
Well, cool. Well, maybe I'll soon know what you're talking about.
What do you mean?
Because I don't watch World Superbike because I haven't found them yet.
Oh.
I've been watching MotoGP.
Oh.
We're going to do the two-minute board early.
Oh, okay.
Because this two-minute board is going to take a little while, longer than a normal one.
Oh, dear. All right, go.
So this two-minute board is, turn seven is not a turn.
Right!
Okay? So
Willow Springs, shot the hell out of me.
If you're on the West Coast,
right,
you find out that pretty much all the turn sevens, it doesn't apply to all of them, are not really turns. So if you're at Willow Springs, you go over this right-handed crested hill turn called six.
Right.
And you bomb along around, you go up through the gears, and you go really, really fast. And then that's my phone ringing. It'll turn off in a minute.
Exactly. I can't believe you didn't turn your phone off. If you were my student, I would throw you out of class in a large and humiliating way.
It's just getting louder.
It is. I guess because I'm deaf. Actually, bring it over here so I can see who it's calling me, because it could be a client.
It's not a client. I don't want to tell you the name. I don't want to say on the podcast.
I'll call him back when we're done. Anyway, so you're bumming along, you start turning right at full speed.
Okay.
And that's turn eight.
Yeah.
And then you get back in the pits and you think about it, you go, wait a minute, the map says turn seven. When I look at the track from the air, I can kind of see this little kink, but when I'm on the track, it's just a damn straightaway.
Right.
You know? So then you go to Laguna Seca.
Uh-huh.
Turn six is a really tricky left-hander with a dip at the apex, and it jumps up out of the bowl and all this kind of stuff. And you go up this steep hill with this wheelie thing in the middle of it, a step.
Right.
And then you brake really hard for the corkscrew.
Which is turn eight.
Which turns out to be turn eight. Right. And you go, well, what happened? So turn seven is not a turn. Okay? But if you go to the East Coast and you go bombing down the long straightaway at Road America, which is not really on the East Coast, it's in the Midwest, actually. You brake for like an hour to slow down for turn one. You make turn one. You go bombing along in a straight line. You brake for a little while. You make a right-hand turn called turn three. What? The turn two kink between turn one and turn three, you need like survey equipment to see it. If you stand at the exit of the corner, you look in a straight line to turn two. You go, how do you guys call this turn three?
Right.
So we've established that most tracks...
Most tracks
call
have
number every little tiny thing.
Right,
they want to get as many numbers as possible.
Right.
Example, I ran radio ads to promote races in Hawaii at Hawaii Raceway Park.
Right.
Short course is 3/4 mile per lap. So I had a radio ad that talked about the six turn, 3/4 mile per lap. And then my friends are like, wait a minute. And I go, look, go count them. And if you count even the little merge back onto the front straightaway after the sweeper, you get to six. Okay? Okay, but then, of course, there's always an exception.
Okay, what's the exception?
So you go to Sears Point, Infineon, or the racetrack formerly known as whatever
Prince.
That's called. Right? And you make this left-hand turn that kind of goes down into a dip.
Okay.
It's called turn three. Okay?
Okay?
And you go up a really steep hill and you make a really sharp, really critical, important turn four. A right-hander, right? Okay? That's called 3B.
Why is that?
I don't know.
I was thinking about that.
Right? It's what they're doing is that they're flipping the bird to all the people that counted that thing as turn seven. Right? Because they're like, listen, we're going to call a left and then a right. Those are both three.
Why is...
The corkscrew is 8A, 8B.
And why are the three turns that make up the top, the Omega section at Willow, why are they called 4A, B, 4B, and 4C?
So
what?
How cool is it to have a corner named after you?
Oh, it's awesome.
Except,
when?
Would you like to know why the corner called Allen's is called Allen's at Shannonville in Canada.
Dead guy?
No.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, you don't want it named after you, if you know.
And before I tell you the reason, I just want to say that they aptly named Rainy Corner. That is one tough corner.
You know what, Jeremy?
If you're going to name a corner after me, name a hard one.
Name that right? one. You know,
and how uncool is it that Lorenzo got taken out in his corner? So the reason that the corner called Allen's is called Allen's at Shannonville in Canada is because the first person to crash at that racetrack crashed in that corner,
right.
And his name is Jim Allen. As in the Jim Dunlop. Allen of Dunlop, he's a Canadian citizen. Yes.
You know what I'll tell you? The I was doing a saved.
So there's multiple ways to get corners named after you. You can do it the Rainy way. Yeah. You can do it the Lorenzo way. You can do it the Jim Allen way.
No, that's not the way you want to do it. Now it's funny that you mentioned Rainy Corner at Laguna. Because I know we're probably over.
Only a little bit. We're doing good for us.
They're not paying by the minute for this, dude, you know? As a matter of fact, nobody's paying us at all because I still don't see any boxes of Hickory Farm shit here. But I digress. I was doing a save. I was interviewing Jeremy Toy and about he crashed in Rainy Corner. And he said, you know, everybody who talks about Laguna talks about the corkscrew. It's like, that's not the corner that gets your attention.
Yeah.
He said, Rainy Corner.
Yep.
And even turn one, it's blind, but at least one's easy. At least it's uphill, right? So you kind of...
Well, it's uphill until the downhill part.
Right. But I mean, when you're approaching it, it's uphill. You get to Rainy Corner, and you know this, you're going downhill.
It's downhill. It's a lot faster than you think it is. And whenever I was running it, there was a big bump three quarters of the way around the corner.
It's not really smooth through there.
Yeah.
But
and the wall's a little bit close. It's definitely close enough that you can see it. You know, I don't know that you can fire yourself into it unless you stay on your wheels. But if it didn't have gravel, you would definitely be in it. Jeremy, and they always put air fence there.
Jeremy hit the air fence there.
Yeah.
But the thing that always got me about that turn was that no matter what bike you were on, when you're on any bike that you've ridden for any length of time, you have this mental kind of calibration of the speed. You turn the throttle this much in this gear, and it accelerates at this rate. You're going downhill so fast there, you turn the throttle where you think it's, and it's going like somebody welded on an extra cylinder. It's like,
it's a tricky corner because the camber... Yeah, because of the camber change, the downhill.
I hate that noise. Ugh! Everybody who's listening, please change
that. We're near the end of our thingy, of our time.
Right.
And it's John Ulrich calling me.
All right.
And we're going to be doing another podcast in a little while after we do a little work on Michael's
motorcycle. Oh, yeah, the Bandit. Yeah, we're going to do some work with Springs. Hey.
So we are thinking deeply. He's Michael Gugis.
He's Ed Sorbo. Aloha.